stage door. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Jackie Clune, and welcome back to the second part of the Equity Green Room podcast on the issue of the class ceiling. In part one, we discussed the policies Equity are coming up with to address these issues, and we talked to Stephanie Greer and Valerie Edmond, and we heard testimony from Equity members around how class has impacted either their training or their career in the creative industries. Welcome to part two. We've got more exciting stuff to talk about with our guests who are joining me in just a moment, David John and Paul Valentine.
Members of the company, this is your quarter hour call. You have 15 minutes. That's 15 minutes. Thank you.
So joining me in the Equity Green Room this evening are audio counsellor David John and equity counsellor and all-round good guy and green activist Paul Valentine. Welcome, guys.
Thank you very much for having us.
Now, David, you've been listening to all this. What's your take on it? How do you identify as a working class performer? What got you into this crazy industry despite your class roots?
Well, I have to say I was incredibly privileged, bearing in mind where I came from, because I came up in a time where we were funded by the state. So I received a training for this industry that without which I would have had no chance. So it was all timing. And that's really one of the things that's fired me up about this. I was having the same thoughts as Stephanie around the same time. And I put it in my kind of statement when I was elected as audio counsellor about working class representation, et cetera. And it's harder now for kids in my, you know, I'm just from suburban Enfield, kind of classic, you know, working class background. But I was funded by the government. You can't get those grants now. They don't exist. So where do those kids go? No, sorry, you can't go to. I went to stage school from age 11, where they really tried to stop me talking like I talk. Some brilliant stories about them saying, well, me walking in the room and them saying, oh, when are you going to learn to speak properly? And so that was at stage school. So imagine that, which I kind of...
Yeah, I was going to ask you, actually, as audio counsellor, I mean, literally the working class voice, that's sort of not quite as sort of taboo as it once was, is it? Is that your experience in audio work? People want more authentic working class voices now?
Absolutely. Absolutely right. And that goes across the board. I mean, originally you would have... you know, your kind of white middle-class voice doing all the accents. We'll be going back a few years now.
With varying degrees of success.
Yeah. Not so good. But really, since that, you know, when I was coming up and working a lot in theatre and telly in the kind of 80s, there were a lot of great working-class actors coming out of various places, but including stage school, because we went through stage school back then. There were the rich kids there who actually, most of them, really shouldn't have been there because they didn't really have what it took to be in the industry. All the ones that have come through and then worked in the business mainly came from our kind of background. And I just wonder what happens to those kids now. You know, if they're told, sorry, you can't go to stage school. And the same thing as Valerie said, you know, no, you can't be an actor. You know, how can you think you could be an actor or a performer or a stage manager or a director or whatever? No, you can't work in that industry. Our industry provides so many jobs across the board for working class people that need to be taken by working class. How can you tell kids of that age? No, sorry. So I don't know how we get back to that. I don't know if it's even possible with this government at the moment, even to talk about it. But it's something that I would really strive for, more support or more bursaries or, you know, if you've passed the kind of audition, which I had to pass back then, and they say, yeah, you've got a chance, you've got a bit of talent, you can, you know, and then you're told, no, sorry, you can't afford it. That's going to someone whose mum and dad have got the money. That's grossly unfair. And for me, it's all about fairness.
Yeah, well, you've hit the nail on the head. We've talked a lot in the past, haven't we, about the leaky pipe of the education system. We're going to be talking a bit more to Paul about that in a bit. But, you know, part of the huge barrier is economics, isn't it? It's the economic barrier that stops working class people accessing training, accessing internships, you know, that might get them work, accessing, you know, schemes where they train unofficially for a year in situ. You know, all of these things are huge barriers to working class people who can't rely on the bank of mum and dad to get them a leg up in the industry.
Yeah, and also your first couple of years, Jackie, in the industry, when you're out auditioning, trying to get that first job, if you're, you know, you haven't got money behind you, you're working. You're working in the pub or the bar or wherever. And then someone says, okay, audition this afternoon, 2 o'clock. Can't make it. Can't get off of my shift. You know, that happens a lot.
So at the moment in the class network, we're trying to establish what our agenda is, aren't we? So one of the problems that we highlighted at the beginning of this was talking to Louise about how you define class. And we're putting together a survey, aren't we? Can you just tell us a little bit about that, David?
Yeah, I mean, this will be going out, I think, quite soon, probably in the next month or so, to members. Members who are interested in, I mean, all these surveys are voluntary, of course, to members, but it's to find out more. I mean, we've got a great group amongst ourselves. We've also spoken to a lot of other people at the launches and got lots of feedback and ideas. But if we get this out to members, just asking, you know, what are your experiences? What do you come up against in the industry? Or did you come up against trying to get into it? What do you want us to do? How do you want us to represent you? We may find out quite a lot. You know, we're still writing the questions, aren't we? We're still trying to get that. But when we do, it would be really interesting to hear, you know, as I say, we've had loads of ideas from our group, but there are so many members out there who have reacted so positively, as Steph said, that, oh God, this is great. I've always wanted something like to represent working class people in the union, in the industry. You know, just for support. I mean, just the we were going to talk about the resource pack, the support pack. People want support when they're sometimes isolated, not getting any work, you know, thinking of giving up. Just offer that kind of support.
So what sort of things will be in the support pack?
Right. Well, the support pack, we go from all sorts of advice. First of all, there's things like what kind of grants are available, bursaries, things like that. There's all sorts of organisations that you can go to, for even charitable organisations like the Equity Charitable Trust and all sorts of things like that when you're in the industry, that is. And then we would offer advice on financial situations you may find yourself in. All sorts of foundations that are out there that most people don't know about. Also financial management. You know, we all have to pay our tax rule, Schedule D. We all get a scary tax bill sometimes at the end of the year. Just giving people a heads up, watch out for this. You don't want to be stitched up by a surprising tax bill. Support for carers. There's mental health section where we would look at imposter syndrome. And knowing about imposter syndrome is a great thing because then it can help you alleviate the kind of debilitating effect of it.
And that is a big thing for working class people, isn't it? Because you don't have the sort of privileged, confident upbringing of like excellent schools and people constantly telling you how great you are and how the world belongs to you.
Yeah, and we've all felt that. We've all walked in a room and thought, oh, how did I get in here, you know?
Well, I was laughing to myself when you were talking about accents because I remember going to uni at the age of 18 and I sound sort of probably fairly middle class now. Well, probably in this group, but like when I'm at the RSC, then people spot my estuary vowels a mile off. But I remember going to university and thinking, I can't talk like my brothers who talk like that because that's you can't do that at uni and be clever. So I adapted my accent.
Yeah.
As a lot of actors do, a lot of people do. Started to talk a lot more like this. Until I got to like the third year when I'd become sort of more radicalized and I was really into politics and stuff. And I was in a feminist theatre seminar and I was talking really passionately about something in my Harlow twang. And the lecturer said, you never used to speak like that when you first came here. You didn't sound like that. Why are you adopting this radical working class chic accent now? And I was so gobsmacked. I was like, what? This is how I really sound. It's only because it's taken me 3 years to feel like I'm allowed to be here to talk like how I really talk. The first time I really acknowledged, oh God, I'm working class. It hadn't even really occurred to me because I'd always just lived amongst people like me until I'd gone to uni.
Yeah, yeah. I think
it's a strange thing to be confronted with prejudice at that age, isn't it? When you've lived it, but not really been aware of it.
Yeah, and they try and knock you into shape kind of thing. I mean, that happens at drama school, doesn't it? A lot of drama schools. I think less now. I don't know. It's so many years ago. You know, you can't go out into the business with that accent. When are you going to learn to speak properly? And it's fine. Yeah, teach me to do RP. Great for work. But don't make me do that all day long, which is what I felt I had to do. When I was going to my first interviews and auditions at the RSC and things like that, I felt I had to walk in the room and say, hello. You know, not hi, how you doing? You know, it's just stop. It's a strange thing. And you have a bit of an identity crisis.
I'd be really interested to talk to members of crew, like stage management and so on, about what it's like being working class in that sector of the industry, because I'm sure there's a lot of sort of privilege, snapping of fingers and stage manager, fetch me this, fetch me that. I'm sure that's a big deal. Yeah. So also joining us, as I said before, is Paul Valentine, who's an equity counsellor and is a big driving force behind the equity Green New Deal for equity. I probably said that all wrong, Paul. Can you put it a bit more eloquently?
No, that was pretty much perfect. Yeah. Equity for a Green New Deal. Yeah,
that's the one. I couldn't remember which order the words went.
Yeah, that's the one. A little similar to, it's a funny one though, because it's sort of running parallel to the Class Network in a lot of respects, in the fact that they're two like sort of flourishing networks that sort of were set up at roughly the same time and have been very grassroots. So we're all trying to make sure that these networks are for everyone, which is what our industry should be for as well. So it's all trying to mirror what we want to see the world to be. That sounds a bit ridiculous, but yeah, you know what I mean.
I do. And you're one of the most hardworking out of work actors during the pandemic that I think I've spoken to, because I think you've worked on just about every frontline job, haven't you?
I've done a few.
Tell us what you've been doing.
I did some shelf stacking in Tesco for a few months, and then I managed to do some online murder mysteries, so that was good. So there was a bit of acting work that intersected it. And then most recently, I'm now working at a vaccination centre, which by pure fluke just happens to be the Battersea Arts Centre. So I've always done like front of house at the theatre as like day jobby stuff. But I'm actually working for the NHS now, but I'm in a theatre.
So it's what's that like when you tell your co-workers that you're an actor? Is there a sense in which you feel like a bit of a phony talking about yourself being working class amongst sort of real working class people in real working class professions, if you like?
To an extent, I suppose. More at Tesco, I would say, than at the NHS. Because I think coming into Tesco, I was working shelf stacking in Tesco Brixton. So I was pretty much the only white guy working on the night shift. And so these are proper like working class people of colour with roots in like the immigration system, all that sort of stuff, who are like, to me, that's proper hard working, you know, like that puts what I feel like what I do in complete perspective, that it's sort of like these guys sleep by day, work by night, pile in all the hours. Essentially, they put the food on the table for us by putting the food on the shelves. But you know what? I absolutely loved it, because there was such a sense of camaraderie to it. There was no pretense at all. And you just came in and we used to like, we'd get on with it. They really respected the hard work, because some of the temps were sort of let go after a week and a half. Some of them weren't really like, sort of to be perfectly frank, pulling their weight. But they seemed to like, I stayed the longest possible duration. And it was like, yeah, Paul, you just get on with it. And I was like, yeah, that's life, which is kind of, maybe that is a kind of, I don't know, working class trait to it in itself. Because I'm always just like, get on with it, which is similar to when you asked Steph earlier about the kind of, what do your parents think question. And I think a lot of people expect from an actor to have a dramatic story of how I came out the womb and was dancing on the tables and then my parents said I couldn't do it and blah blah, you know, all that sort of stuff. Nothing like that at all. It was just, oh yeah, mum and dad, I might want to be an actor. And they're like, all right, then we'll get on with it, make sure you're financially secure, see you later. Like it's just that was it, you know.
Yeah, I think one of the difficulties that I find talking to fellow equity members about class and about our position as workers in the economy is that we do see ourselves as sort of different from other workers. And OK, we may not be employees 20 like 365 days a year, we go from contract to contract, but we are still working people. And, you know, a lot of us are working class. And if you take away the lights and the costume and the gin and tonics at the interval, working in a theatre is like working in any other job, really, isn't it? I mean, we just happen to be good at different things. That's how I like to explain it. I don't think we're special people.
No, well, I often tell people the work that I've done as an actor in contrast to that kind of narrative, because most of what I've done has been outdoor touring theatre. So you put up the stage, you build the set, you, if it breaks, you get out the drill and you fix it, and then you perform on it, and then you do the acting thing, and then there's no time for a gin and tonic because you're putting it all away, and then you're putting it in the van, and then you are also driving the van another 2 hours down the road to the travel lodge, where you share a room with someone else, so you don't get any privacy, you don't really ever relax, and sort of 3 months down the line, you're like, ah, because it's just been all that sort of work. And when you tell people that kind of thing, it's nice because it changes people's view of what you do, because they don't really, they're like, what, you put up the stage? It's like, yeah, of course. What, you drive yourself to the venues? Yeah, I mean, I'm not getting a chauffeur, am I? Like, come on. Yeah. It puts it into perspective a bit.
Yeah, theatre's not all red carpets and glamour, is it? So you're putting the work back into working class, Paul, single-handedly right there. Thank you so much. Now, Paul, you're going to tell us a little bit about the campaigns that are currently underway at Equity. You're going to keep us up to date with the main priorities. And Louise and David and Steph and Valerie are still here. If you want to chip in and ask Paul any questions about what he's about to tell us, please feel free. So, Paul, what's going on at Equity at the moment?
Yeah, sure. So at the moment, Equity HQ, from the likes of policy and political side of things, are really kind of focusing at the moment on three particular issues. And a lot of it actually, as you'd expect, intersects with the kind of class side of things as well. So the first thing, really important thing that's being looked at the moment, is higher education arts course funding cuts, which ties in quite nicely with the conversation that was had with David earlier about like state school education and getting stuff paid for, etc., etc. But essentially, earlier on in the year, our good friend, the Education Secretary, Gavin Williamson, announced that the government would be cutting the funding for arts higher education courses by 50%. Because as we know, people of privilege see the arts as a preserve of the rich and just a bit of a laugh, isn't it? So that can all go, because everything must be English, maths and science, even though you speak to English people, mathematicians and scientists, and they'll be like, yeah, but the arts helps us imagine, you know, all that kind of stuff. But essentially, Equity are fighting these cuts in the strongest possible terms. So they're looking at the sort of the impact on arts provision in non-specialist institutions, especially like post-1992 universities, because often those have been institutions that have been so vital in widening out the sort of opportunities for people to study stuff outside of the kind of Oxbridge elite. So if you're getting this kind of funding cuts happening, that's a real problem. And then, of course, because of the way these institutions are geographically spread as well, if you start cutting 50% off of all the higher education stuff, you're going to end up with cultural kind of cold spots. And that is going to definitely be outside of London and outside of even Manchester or Birmingham. It's going to be outside the big cities. So it's what it's saying is, if you're born in, I don't know, I'm just going to throw Burnley out. It's the first one that's come into my head. I think via football teams. I think, what's a good working class football team, as well as the mighty Crystal Palace? I've gone with Burnley. And I don't know, you're a person who's grown up in Burnley, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, I want to study relatively locally because I haven't got money to move away. But yeah, 50% off your arts funding. Is that university going to keep trying to thinking about the arts? No, it's not, because the universities also are in a kind of capitalistic money-making sort of frame of mind, so people won't have those opportunities. So it's something that Class Network and, of course, Equity, and with support from like our sister unions like BECTU, Writers Guild, Musicians Union, and indeed this sort of narrative is going through to the bigger unions like Unison, GMB and Unite as well, who all represent higher education workers. So,
and we're taking this petitioning to Parliament.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I think that's, yeah. So it's essentially, there's a petition on it, and the creative union sort of started it and led with it. And then they brought, like we often do, we bring the big boys along with us and say, "Oi, come on, this is happening." And then they sign it too, and you spread it to members far and wide. So I'm sure all the information can be found on the news section of the EPTI website. And if people want to sign the petition, write to their MP, write to your local councillor even. I mean, I think that's often forgotten that politics starts locally. It isn't just MPs. It isn't just the cabinet. There's also local councillors as well that can help. Local area assembly members, etc.
I just wanted to bring in Stephanie and Valerie and David here and ask, you know, did you get drama in school? Was there an arts education in your school? That there wasn't really in mine, but I found it in my local theatre. Do you think that, you know, you had sufficient arts education growing up? Do you think that's a big factor in why working class people experience barriers in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I did a sort of interview with Forbes magazine, Jackie, to talk about London becoming a ghetto of wealth. And it's really interesting to talk about class in relation to this, because it's almost as though there's a wealth class now, especially in London. Because, and it's funny, actually, with you and Paul chatting about, you know, what is special, you know, we're not special, you know, in actors, you know, I think we're incredibly special. I hate all that, you know, I get paid for dressing up and not bumping into the furniture. I hate all that. You know, to get to put the dress on, to get to walk onto the stage with the furniture is what has been so tough. To get to actually get there and do it is what has been so tough. It's incredible. So the thing is that more special than, say, somebody who works in the financial services or who's a banker or who's a trading person who's gambled with somebody's pension fund and put it on? Are they, you know, that's the wealth class. And what we need in society is money in order to be able to make the choices that we have. And if you're from a working class background, and like Paul's saying about the cuts, it's devastating. It will be devastating for people to be able to think, from working class backgrounds, to think they can join. We're going to, you know, who knows what stories that are going to be told. It's going to be a version of the truth. It won't be the truth. Version of the truth created by a wealth class. That's how I see it.
Yes. And Stephanie, what about you?
Yeah, so similar to you, Jackie, in that for me it was an amateur dramatic society where it was like £1 subs for 12 months or something. Like, it was so affordable, and we did like a panto once a year, and I think there was a play you could audition for in the spring, and then it went on. There was a youth theatre that again was slightly more expensive, but again cheap. And if it hadn't been for that youth theatre, which had an agency running alongside it, and that agent picked me out of that youth theatre and said, "We will represent you," and that's where it all came from. But so in Wigan, where I'm from, there is no proper theatre. When I was growing up, there wasn't even a proper music venue. So there was nowhere to go and even see stuff. So it was quite a big deal to go to Manchester to go and see a musical or something. But in terms of being able to afford to even do any of the studying or whatever, like bringing back to what David said about grants and things, like I feel really lucky now when I look at teenagers at school and things. Like, if it hadn't been for the Labour government with the EMA, Education Maintenance Allowance, that got me through sixth form, then I got a grant to go and study acting at university. They gave me money for my living allowance. Like, there's just no way on this planet that I would have gone and studied past sixth form if it was now, because how on earth can you afford to go?
I know, I was thinking about this the other day. It used to be that if you wanted to audition for drama school, you went to audition, and if you got a place, then you would audition for a grant, and it was provided by the council, I think. You got to audition in front of a panel for a grant. Yeah. Can you imagine any such a thing now?
That's what I had to do. Yeah. Just briefly coming in on that. I mean, I was incredibly lucky in that. I think my dad was a bit of a frustrated performer, and he kind of helped me along, went to a local kind of song and dance school, you know, what do you want to make those eyes at me for? You know, that kind of tap dancing and all that. And so they got me to a state where I could audition for stage school, which is coming out, you know, from where I was just another world. And I got a grant. I got in. They were desperate for boys, I think. I mean, there was loads of fantastically talented girls at the school and, you know, not that many boys. And that was my way in. I mean, just getting that support off to stage school. And then I had to re-audition at Enfield Council in a council room. I'll never forget it. Bright white lights, five people behind a desk who clearly didn't have a clue about the business. And I did the speech from Equus. I don't know if you know it, when he's on the horse, and it wasn't really appropriate, but that's like, that was my audition speech.
Did you get the grant?
They would utterly shocked. They just looked and went, oh, but I got the grant. So yeah.
They're probably too scared not to give you it. Thanks very much for that. And so Paul, so we've got this campaign. What else is going on at Equity?
So the next one is the big issue of our time, of course, Brexit. That has not gone away despite the pandemic and everything. So what Equity has done is it's launched a new lobbying action for members following the government's continuing inability to resolve the problems faced by our members travelling to the EU27 for work. And essentially, together with a number of unions, industry bodies and MPs from across the political spectrum, we've got kind of like four main demands. So demand number one is we want a bespoke visa waiver agreement with the EU for the creative sector. We want bilateral agreements with key individual EU member states. We want emergency funding to cover additional costs when undertaking work in Europe. And we want to reduce impact of new road haulage and cross trade rules. So they're the kind of big four things in relation to Brexit. And it's kind of crucial, really, that Equity members take part in this lobby. So because we know, like, for example, last week, Lord Frost, who's the UK's chief Brexit negotiator, declined to turn up to the DCMS committee in Parliament to answer questions about the problems faced by creative workers, because obviously he's decided it doesn't matter to him. So
it's devastating for big commercial international tours or, you know, crews trying to travel freely in Europe, actors trying to flit over to do a bit of filming. It's across the board in our industry, isn't it? It's so important that they actually address this and get it right.
So again, we need to keep up that pressure on him as Lord Frost and the government. So again, it's very much like, I'm going to say this after everyone, it is all about lobbying your local councillors, your MPs, your assembly members, getting those people in power and politicians on side, making them know about what Equity is and what it does, because then you can secure these debates in Parliament and get the right people around the table to make the change that we want to see.
Quite. And I think we've got time for one more policy focus, Paul.
There is. It's the final one as well, which is actually quite important to us as a union, because we're joining forces across the union sort of circle, if you like, to resist new levies and draconian rules that the government want to impose on unions. Now this comes up, like, it feels like it comes up like sort of every so often, almost like a European championship. In fact, probably more often than that. But there's always some sort of attack on the unions. And this time what we've got is an attack through the certification officer. So essentially, there's a certification officer who has to sort of do various bureaucratic things in relation to the way the unions run. And the changes that were announced on the 8th of June essentially mean that 2.5% of Equity's income has to be paid to this certification officer and the regulator in the future. And of course, if we're paying 2.5% to something that's governmental red tape, then that's 2.5% that's not going on members, on Green New Deal stuff, on class network, you know, on all the issues that we care about. It could be literally going for someone to just sign a few bits of paper and have an office in Parliament, and we don't like that. So again, we're lobbying the councillors, MPs, assembly members, and trying to get a reverse to this.
Further chipping away, isn't it?
Exactly.
Thanks so much, Paul Valentine. Thank you to all my guests. I'd just like to ask everyone just to contribute. You know, we don't want the Class Network to become just a talking shop. That's something that we've been very definite about, haven't we, since the beginning. So I'd just like everyone, perhaps starting with Louise, to say what she thinks the key focus should be. Like, what's the main issue here? We've all been talking about our accents and education and the leaky pipe and whether or not there's discrimination in the industry against working class people, whatever their part in the profession. But industrially, what's our key aim, Louise?
Our key aim, Jackie, is to get employers to recognise that this is a problem, and they are the people who have the money. They have the power to make decisions. They have the ability to recruit people, to cast people. So they need to take that responsibility seriously. And one of the things that my colleague Ian Manborn's been doing over the last few months is working with a number of organisations to come up with a social mobility toolkit for this industry. Now, you know, that is something that could make a real difference, not just in terms of giving employers who do want to do the right thing the methods by which that they can open up access to their jobs and treat people from working class backgrounds the way that they deserve to be treated. But it also means that we'll have the ability to monitor change in the future and also call out employers who just haven't improved their employment statistics for working class people or the pay rates for them in the future. So it is a good time to make change. There is an openness and a willingness to look at this issue, whether it's at government level, at employer level, and actually the Class Network really refocusing itself, relaunching in the wake of the pandemic is one of the most positive things that we've got at this time. And we all need to give you all our energy and focus to be able to make those wins for the majority of people out there in this country and the majority of people who either consume this content or want to work in this industry.
Thanks very much. David, what's your key aim?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that as Louise was chatting, and there's so many, but I was really shocked to discover when I moved the motion at TUC about class inequality a couple of years ago, really shocked to discover the class pay gap in our business. I thought that was outrageous. And of course, it was much worse for women. It was much worse for people of colour. If you're a woman and of colour, you were earning a ridiculous amount less than someone who was not. And it just struck me as unbelievable. We must be able to do something about that as a union, because that is possibly illegal, isn't it? I mean, you know, how can you pay someone less for doing the same job as someone else because of their gender or colour or class? It can't be right. So that is a big thing for me. That, alongside pushing for the UBI, I think would be great. Universal basic income.
Yeah, that would be huge.
Would be fantastic. And there are countries trying it out now. It's not a ridiculous pie in the sky thing. It might work for everyone. It might actually not be more expensive for the government. It might just be fairer. And fairness is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. That and getting people... We've all got these experiences where people try and put you off, don't get you educated. No, you can't do that. There isn't work in that industry. There is. Let's get, you know, these career officers at schools. My son's just been to one. It's not an option. Why don't they get educated in their job to say there are loads of jobs in our industry? Look at the amount of jobs it provides. Look at the amount of money we bring into this exchequer every year. 112 billion, I think, was the quote from last year. I think that was last, the government's figures. That's people working, that's people paying tax. You know, that to me is, you know, just sums it up really.
Yeah, let's open up the doors. Stephanie, what about you? What's your main aim?
Mine is to really sign off these, I say little niggles, but things that make an enormous difference to us in our working lives. So let's make sure that these companies, these theatres, are casting locally, that they're rehearsing locally, that we are given enough time to prepare so we don't have to get sacked from our, you know, the job that we're doing to keep us going, to be able to go to that audition, that we are not knackered when we're getting seen for a job that we really want to go for and you're going against someone who's had a lovely night's sleep because they've not had to work in a bar till 4 a.m. It's these little things. Let's make sure that casting directors employees, because it's not just actors, it goes throughout, you know, anyone you go for a job interview, you should be told whether or not you've got that job or not. It's outrageous. So yeah, for me, it's those things which seem so easy to change. Let's just get it done.
Yeah, great. And Paul?
Yeah, I think for me, of course, I'm going to tie in the class network again with the climate crisis, because we know that the climate crisis disproportionately affects and is disproportionately affecting working class people across the world. And although we may not be seeing the full forces here, we're starting to see it. Flooding will affect working class people first, et cetera, et cetera. And I think tying in with that, we also know that by being more climate conscious, we improve people's social mobility. So, for example, the big campaign of Cast It Here, we want people to not all come from the rich, privileged circles of London. You cast in towns, you cast in cities across the UK. All of a sudden, you're not shipping actors all around and chucking a load of carbon into the atmosphere, because you're saying, here's the local talent and here's where it will stay and here it will be used. So for me, there's all that kind of intersect that I'm quite sort of passionate about.
Brilliant. And finally, the lovely Valerie, what's your big aim for this network?
Well, I was just thinking, as everyone was talking there, Jackie, that if you put everything that our industry is into a sieve and distilled it, there would be one word left at the bottom of it, and that word is identity. Our industry is about identity, and the identity of people who are in positions of power is something they hold dear. And there's conceits that run through it and have done for years and years. And the most important thing to them are two things. One is reputation, and the second one is moral high ground. And if you're not doing what you should be doing and you're not doing what's fair, you know that, right? You know that. And we know it. And we're going to call you out, and that will affect your reputation, and you will no longer be able to stand on the moral high ground. And therefore, your identity will change. And that's a threat. So we're a threat, and we're a wonderful threat, and we're a threat for all the right reasons. And what I want to see is a continuation of this conversation, because we're making people aware. Because you know what, Jackie? A lot of people, you know, aren't aware of this issue and don't want to be aware of it. And we are knocking at their door. They're opening, and we're standing there and we're saying, we're not going away. This is it. And you have to change. And that's what's happened with Me Too. It's happened with all sorts of behaviours in our industry, and it's going to happen with this. So I'm very positive about it.
Yes, we are a wonderful threat, the Equity Class Network.
Members of the company, please make your way to the stage for the movement call and fight call. Thank you.
And that's it. Thank you so much to all of my guests. Thank you to our wonderful stage manager on the tannoy, Carol Pestridge. Equity Green Room podcast is produced by Tom Greenwood. I'm Jackie Clune. And if you have any comments or you'd like to get involved, please do email us at zellsmore@equity.org.uk. See you again next time.